places in the world. I follow the sun in my silver plane. Universal traveler, universal traveler, universal traveler, universal traveler. If you have a look outside on the sea, everything is white. It's so wonderful. Universal traveler, universal traveler, universal traveler, universal traveler.
Happy Sunday afternoon. Hope you are enjoying some sunshine wherever you are. It is sunny here, but still a little bit cold. But it's like that hopeful spring is coming. You know it's coming. All signs are saying it's coming soon. It's just not quite here yet. Apparently there's three sorts of kisses for a young girl. The nominal kiss, the throbbing kiss, and the touching kiss. When a girl touches the mouth of her lover with her own, but does not herself do anything, it's called a nominal kiss. When a girl, setting aside her bashfulness a little, wishes to touch the lip and is pressed into her mouth, and with that object moves her lower lip, but not the upper one, it's called the throbbing kiss. When the girl touches her lover's lips with the tongue, and having her eyes shut, and her hands on her lover, it's called the touching kiss. So, I don't know, probably infinite number of kisses. I like blowing kisses, so here I am blowing you kisses from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Ink and Worm, all things reading and writing, and we are also a podcast, so Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, tell all your friends. I have a guest today, but she's stuck somewhere in the city because Google did not give her good directions, so we're winging it again, which is good practice because improvising, it's nice to stay on your toes and never take anything for granted. So I this week have been thinking a little bit about like reading plans. I feel like so often I'm like, oh, I should do this or I should read these things. Like, for example, there's a list on the internet floating around of like all the books that Rory Gilmore read during the show Gilmore Girls. I was like, oh, that'd be cool to read all the books that Rory read because Rory's so cool. And then maybe I'd be cool too. And then I start with good intentions and very quickly move on to other things. So I think my default reading is just like sporadic. And sometimes I'm into fiction and sometimes I'm like, can't get into fiction and I sucked into nonfiction for a while. So it just depends. But one other idea I had recently is like more like Elia. She's on my first show and she is a friend. She's a completionist. So if she starts reading an author, she'll like read every book by the author. And I always think that that's such a cool idea. Like, oh, I love that author. I'm going to read everything they wrote. And then I don't know what it is. Maybe I get bored. Maybe I need different voices in my head. I don't know. What is your experience? Do you have a reading plan or some sort of like formula to the way you approach the books you read? Or do you just kind of grab and go? I think it also depends on how books integrate into your life. If it's like you're reading as a lover that you're sneaking out to spend time with, then you're probably going to be a little bit more discriminant about the books that you choose. Whereas if you have lots of reading time, I imagine it's easier to just read the things maybe to have a little bit less prioritizing happening. Just thoughts. Haven't been listening. Oh, I did listen to an audiobook this past week. I listened to the end of Fates and Furies, which has gotten a lot of attention, and I think rightly so. It's a very good book. I am glad that I was listening to it because it is hefty. It's a bigger book, and had I just been reading it, I might have been intimidated and set it aside. So, yay! Nysa just walked in the door.
Yay!
She's here. She found us.
Oh, my goodness.
This is you.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No, welcome, welcome.
Yay!
So, I was just talking about reading plans, because I always feel like I have these ideas of, like, oh, I'm going to read... Like, the example I gave was, like, all the books that Rory Gilmore read.
Oh, really?
Or, like, I'm going to read through a series, and I can never, like, just do that. I'm always stopping and, like, reading kind of sporadic books. I don't have a plan. Hi, welcome. This is my friend Nysa.
Hello.
And she is an actress, model, comedian, and friend, graduate from Tisch School of the Arts. Very impressive resume. Lots of roles under your belt. All kinds of things. Oh, I do want to mention really fast... I think it's really important and relevant. You can meow exactly like a cat.
I can, yeah.
Yeah. And you have a good ear for accents and can do several rather well, including Hispanic, British, Cockney, General Southern, Irish, German. And you can speak Spanish.
Hablo muy poquito español.
And read Spanish.
Sí. I'm not going to lie. I shouldn't admit this on air. People are going to totally find out.
I won't tell anyone.
But I put that I can read and speak Spanish, but I can read and speak basically like a third grade.
You're
not
like,
even, like a kindergarten.
You're like, if you hire me for that, I'll practice really fast.
Yeah, pretty much. I have a good accent, a good like accent when I speak Spanish because my dad speaks Spanish fluently, so I grew up with an ear for it. So, like, there are people who speak Spanish fluently who can't, like, who don't have an accent as well as I do. But I don't.
So you sound Spanish, but you know, in terms of your vocabulary, it's probably
exactly. It's not a lot there. Of like there was a book I always read, a Dr. Seuss book that was like, "Are you my mommy?" I can read that entire book in Spanish
with the accent. It sounds very authentic.
Yeah,
should make an audiobook.
Yeah,
you're also a blue belt in karate, and you've been. Pick up dance moves generally fast.
I can.
And I can't attest to that personally, but I believe it's true.
I was really proud of myself the other night. I was at a party, the place that I used to work at, it was their showcase, and I went to their party.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing this dance that I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And my old boss was like, oh, I can't, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, I can pick this up. And like, my... after one round was like, I've got the moves. I was
nice.
Very proud of me.
And that is a very good talent to have. I think that's why I stopped dancing with like a group because I was terrible at learning the dances and I'd always watch other people, which means by default I would be like two moves behind. Not good for like synchronicity and whatnot. Can we hear your meow?
Yeah, of course.
A little bit full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. Does your cat have a name?
Buddy?
Your cat.
Oh,
sound?
My cat sounds. There are several. So like that one, it's
like
all,
a general cat and then there's like kitten.
Well, it's all copying different cats that I've had. So that one is like the meow. It's very similar to my cat Zephyr, although he also would meow like meow, when he was younger and as he got older it would be meow.
Oh my god.
And then there's, like, my cat Princess, which is...
Oh, my God.
That's more of a don't get near me or I will stab
she
you.
She was a little feisty.
She never attacked us, but she would...
She's so vocal.
Yeah. Like, she'd only vocalize it. So it was a lot of, like, what she wanted to do to us physically being spoken in her, like curses.
Let me just tell you. It's like the people who are like, you're a fucking moron, but it's like an endearment.
Yeah, exactly. It's more like the people who are just like, I'm not going to hurt you because I can't.
But I'm gonna tell you what I wish I could do.
But I am going to put a curse on you. May your family and your family's family. Like, it's that
she
kind
was
of,
just
like
retroactively cursing your entire bloodline.
Precisely.
With a one meow.
Yeah. And then we've got my buddy, which is like, hold on, let me see if I can get this. It's like a...
We're both cat people. Your cat is not a very nice cat.
No, my cat is not nice.
Which is amazing because, you know, there's like moody cats, but your cat will just be like, look at you, and then you'll like see the tail twitch and you're like, shit, and he's like full on attack.
Yeah.
You're like, wow.
Yeah. What's so sad is that they're the exact opposite moments where he's just like, all I want is love. Like, he comes up and he licks us.
That's when you take pictures and post them on Instagram and everyone's like, oh, your cat's so nice.
Your cat's adorable. And I'm like, no.
No. Maybe he's like legit crazy. Like, he's like schizophrenic cat version.
I think he might be like legitimately bipolar. I also think that he has several, like, I'm a very strong believer in cats like actually having like human mental diseases. Because like my cat Zephyr,
it's not anthropomorphism. They've got this.
I'm almost positive. My cat Zephyr has, oh golly, how can I explain this? He like if like Asperger's. If cats can have Asperger's, he definitely has it because of the way like he's good at interacting with people. So maybe that's not the case. But like it's little things that like just kind of he doesn't understand. Like when he was a kitten, he would run really fast in one direction and I'd pick him up and turn him around and he'd just keep running.
Oh, gosh.
Like he wouldn't realize that we had done anything.
Like and nothing changed.
Yeah.
He was just like in the movement
and
of his body.
And he doesn't pick up on cues. Like he'll come up and like get next to other cats and they're like, no, I don't want you around. And he'll just be like, so we're friends? And you're like, oh, you poor thing. And Buddy is, I'm pretty sure, just dealing with some stuff from growing up on the streets.
That's legit. I mean, I was never on the streets, but I imagine if you're a cat on the streets, it can be a rough world.
Yeah. I get there's an How I Met Your Mother joke that's like, or no, it's a Dimitri Martin. Sorry. What? How could I confuse the two? Anyway, there's a Dimitri Martin joke about like how hot a woman is versus how much she talks about how intuitive her cat is. And he's like, as you can see, over time, it doesn't matter how hot you are. I don't want to hear about your goddamn cat. And I'm almost positive. So can I curse? Because I'm
Yeah, you okay, can good. Say whatever you want.
Anyway, I'm almost positive. Fun. I'm that girl. I'm the girl that you're like.
And people are like.
It's like, you're not that hot for me to listen to your cat. Just stop. Because I can continue onward.
Have you seen when you meow, my cat or my dog starts looking for the cat? She like starts frantically searching. You came over for breakfast once and I meowed and she will legit like run around the apartment and then look at me and be like, I heard the cat. There's a cat here somewhere, Mom. I heard it. We have to find it. I just heard it. And like it can make her pretty crazy, which is not very nice maybe, but it's really entertaining.
It's really funny. My favorite is with cats. That's when you know. It's like if you do a British accent and someone's like, oh, where from England are you? And you're like, oh, I mean. I can make cat noises and my cats are just like,
wait.
Is there there's another cat? No, there's not. I don't smell. Why is there a cat?
I think this may be just like a cat person thing because I totally think that's like, you just talk to your cats, but you're speaking their language and you don't actually know what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's that New Yorker cartoon that's like, I meowed back to my cat and I'm afraid of what I agreed to. Like, what did I just say? The cat's like, right. And you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I was overhearing someone having a conversation on Cafe earlier this week, and it was not a very interesting conversation by any stretch of the imagination. It was really, but at some point in the conversation, she was like, TMFC? TMFC? And I was like, what? And she's like, too many fucking cats. And I was like, oh, there's an abbreviation for like a type of person that has too many fucking cats. I was like, okay, it's like
I love that.
Moms you'd fuck, or like they're like, it's a category of people that you can identify with some letter.
Yeah, that would probably be me. Although at this point, I guess I only own one cat.
Yeah.
For now. I totally want a second. I want to get him a little brother.
I want a kitten.
Yeah.
Yeah, my roommate's allergic.
Oh.
Here's my beef. I think that litter boxes are absolutely disgusting. And my last cat was toilet trained.
Oh.
And having done that, I will never have a litter box again.
Oh, my God.
But everyone in the household has to be on board with that training.
Yeah.
And if you live with roommates, that's not going to happen. But, yeah, toilet training your cat is actually surprisingly easy, especially if you start when they're, like, youngish.
I think Buddy almost got it. He was, like, a second away, but the problem was So the way his mind works is every time you just take away the litter box or the litter box is too dirty, he's just like, oh, I'll find another giant open space to poop in. So what always happened as we were...
Logical.
What always happened as we were training him is we would take it down to like step three. And then we were like, all right, step four, that's where you're actually using the toilet.
He's like, and he'd look at it and be like, no pellets here.
No. And then he'd look at the bathtub and be like, large open space, slightly contained. My God.
We had that problem with my cat, and I was like, there's an easy solution to this. There's got to be an easy solution. You know, we're like, got it. And finally, after much conversation, we Google it, and the Google answer was, fill your tub with water, and the cat will jump in there once and be like, shit! So I guess if your cat likes water, that won't work, but...
We tried it. It was... now, granted, we could try it again now. But the bathtub that we had didn't have a good stop system.
So
like over a day it would drain and then it would just be back to problem.
And you're one. Like, well, you know, all these obstacles.
Life.
But I work with animals a lot. So I end up cleaning a lot of litter boxes. And every time I'm just like, this isn't necessary. And so gross. I like have a mask. I'm just like, I can't breathe this. It's no good. Well. Thank you for coming. Thank you for making it. Have you caught in your breath?
I have. It was like I said in the text message, it would have been a hilarious story had it not happened to
me. It's funny now.
Yeah.
All is well.
Yeah. I basically, for those who are listening, I guess, and also just because I like telling stories, I had looked up the address yesterday, and it said it was like 5 minutes from this place I used to work, which takes 30 minutes to get there. And it said 34 minutes from your house. So I was like, awesome. That's nothing. Mm-hmm. So the next day or today, I was like, I'll leave my house at 1. I'll get there at like 1:30. That's going to be plenty of time for me to like relax, get to know what's happening. And then I left my house a little late because I always do. But I left it at 1:10. Like, I was like, okay, a little late. I'll still be there with, like, 15, 20 minutes to spare. It'll be fine. And as I was on the subway, I was like, let me just confirm the address so I know which way to look. And it was like, oh, actually, it's way far away from where you thought it was. Have fun.
Yeah, Google. I've had some similar experiences. I think the general rule is just plan on me being a half an hour to an hour late. I don't know how I've always been on time to this, actually. I've, like, show up a few minutes early, and I think the closest I cut it was, like, 5 minutes early. But I've always, like, been here when my show's starting. Well, except the blizzard time. When the blizzard hit, I came, and, like, the studio was snowed in, and my guest was like, oh, I can't drive there. Call me when you get in. And then I was just, like, locked out. I had to find a key and I had to dig it out. And then a part of me was like, I give up. I should just give up. There will just be silence on the air for an hour. I'll figure it out next week. But I somehow managed to get in and did it in perseverance. But that was like literally nature. That was not like that was outside of my control.
Yes. Very impressive.
I'm so dedicated to podcasting and radio and books and writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You used to be a writer and then you transitioned into...
I did. When I was younger, I wanted to be a writer. I had high hopes for myself. I wanted to go to Oxford. I was like, Oxford or nothing.
You can do anything.
I went to Oxford for a writing program, actually, in high school. Mm. The Oxbridge program, which if you're a high school student, I highly recommend.
I'm not.
No. Obviously. But I went there for writing and I took... but that was... So I wanted to go to Oxford because J.R.R. Tolkien went there and I was super into like The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings at that time. And so then I went. But at that point, because I had to put it off for a year for reasons, by the time I went, I realized I wanted to be an actor. But I had already agreed to go to the writing program. But that's fine. I still got to spend a month in England as like a 15-year-old. Completely unsupervised. Supervised, obviously, but like...
Ish.
Like, supervised the way college supervises you. Like, I was able to go out. I went to, like, pubs. I didn't drink because if I did, I would get kicked out. But other people did. I did hookah.
Was this the first time you'd ever did hookah?
I think so.
England?
Yeah. Yes. It's tricky. I don't know if the first time was with my mom or in England. But either way, Fair. It was a really wonderful experience.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but do you know what the difference is between UK and England?
I don't. I think the UK specifically, because it's United Kingdom, so I
yeah,
think
includes like
Scotland, it would be like Scotland, Ireland, and England, and then England is just England. But I don't think it makes a difference postal code-wise. At least I hope not, because I just sent a whole bunch of things through my current job to England, and I wrote UK. So,
United Kingdom is a country that includes England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. Its official name is the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Boom.
Boom. England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland are often mistaken as names of countries, but they are only part of the United Kingdom. Thanks, Google.
I feel like that was slightly a burn to, like, Scotland. It's like, people often think Scotland's the name of a country.
They're like their own
but
place.
But you're not.
But they're not. Oh. That's, like, really high on my list. If I could go to Scotland before I die, I could die happy.
I think that you can.
Oh, they have, like, planes and stuff.
Yeah. Even if they don't, they have, like, boats. You know, people in the old days used to do it.
I'm kind of scared. I'd rather fly than boats because it takes less time. So they get paranoid. So at least if I'm flying, like, I only have so long to be paranoid. If I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat for, like, a week. And then I'm just the whole time like, what if we sink? What if we sink? There's so many things that could happen.
I mean,
although I've never been on a boat. Well, that's not true. I've been on, like, day trips, but, like, sailboats.
Yeah.
In the ocean. Yeah. But still sailboats.
Nothing that's so far away you can't see shore.
Oh, I went on a ferry once between the Greek islands and at night, and there was moments where all you could see was stars because it was so flat and the stars were reflecting in the water. God. That was like, I'm so small. I'm nothing.
Beautiful.
I'm dust.
Oh, like, my goodness.
But also like, holy shit, how are there so many stars that I've never even noticed? And they're at, like, reflected in the water. It's just like, whoa, what? Yeah. And then I've been thinking a lot about nature this past week, and I think it's because I've been in the city in one stretch for a while, and so my, like, subconscious is like, remember when you were in nature? But I just thinking of another powerful moment, so that moment with the stars, and then there was also a moment I went whale watching, and it's kind of touristy and gimmicky, and part of me is like, geez, I paid a lot of money to do this, and then as soon as a whale, like, surfaced, I was like, like, oh my God, I'm nothing, this creature. Like, wow. No, nature is a trip.
Nature is a trip. And whales are amazing, as are dolphins. They are my favorite animal.
Really? Yeah. Did you know that dolphins are gay?
Yes.
And that they gang rape?
Yes.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be saying that so excitedly. But that is part
complex
of
complex societies.
That's part of what makes them my favorite animal. They have friendships and, like, marriages and like,
and you like how I know the negative things. Did you know they're violent?
Oh,
and
no,
you're
no.
Like, yeah, you, but
they're the only other animal, to my knowledge, I think, outside of, like, monkeys.
Bonobos.
I used to be better about this.
Monkeys,
yeah,
are
bonobos.
Smart.
But outside of, like, humanoid type animals, they're the only other ones that kill for reasons besides eating. They kill for revenge.
Like, I just fucking hate you.
Yeah. Well, there was this one, from what I read somewhere, this one dolphin that kidnapped and killed the child of, like, his ex-girlfriend, essentially, which is a very human quality. Or not human, but, like...
Yeah, but just, like, jealousy or rage or something.
Yeah. But isn't that amazing?
And it is very amazing. And it's just, I think it goes to show that we probably also know nothing about anything,
but also just imagine.
But what we do know is so interesting.
Yes, imagine how wonderful it would be to be part of that, like, to be a dolphin and to have this kind of thought and this kind of life and, like, inner world, but then not have society or a job or anything that we have nowadays.
Just food. You just have to worry about food.
Yeah,
and anyone who wants to shank you.
I mean, not shank you so much as just bat their head against you until you die.
Yeah, thank you. We are also going to talk about books and writing, but we mentioned plays.
Yes.
And you read a lot of plays, and I think I just read my first play, like, of my own volition.
Yes.
Oh. Like, in school, they, like, made you read plays sometimes, and you're always like, I'll be this voice, I'll be this voice. And that was, like, obligatory. But I just read Cat in the Hot Tin Roof. And anyways, let's talk about plays. What is your experience?
Plays are always really interesting to me because plays – the thing about plays is obviously they need to be seen. So for me, whenever I start reading a play, what I like to do is read it out loud for a while because then you at least get the rhythm of it, or else it's very easy to, like, lose the kind of magical world of it all.
Yeah.
But then as you go on, it's very, like, I enjoy seeing the play kind of create itself.
Yeah, I've seen lots of live theater, but that's, like, something that's been rehearsed and, like,
yeah, you know, exactly.
Someone's, like, imagined this world and they've imagined their own version of it.
Yeah, and it's really easy with plays. I had a class about this once, but it's really easy with plays to just go for the obvious choice when you're reading it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for instance, I wish I could remember the name of this play, and I'm really sorry. I'm going to reference it without giving you a name. But
if you remember later, let me know, and I'll put it in the show notes.
That would be great.
I do that all the time. I know. I'm like, this thing that I don't remember, I'll look it up. I'll get it.
But it was this play about this woman, and she had a kid, and there was somebody who was coming to take the kid away. Like this family, and someone was coming to take the kid away. I forget what that's called. I'm sorry, people. I'm really bad with names. Words. Just words. So you read it, and you think that social worker, you think that social worker is a bad person, right? Because they're coming to take the child away from the lead character. Of course they're a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
But then the person who was teaching this class gave us this or just was like, how about instead of thinking it that way, which is the obvious choice, you read it with the you switch your point of view of the character, which is an obvious thing, but sometimes you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So switch the point of view and get behind that character and ask yourself, why are they doing this? And then you start to realize that, like, oh, no, they're actually in no way, shape, or form the villain. They're coming because they have this job to do, and their job is to make sure this child is safe, and this home environment is not supporting that. And so, yes, she's not listening to the mother being like, well, I'm trying and I'm doing this, but of course not, because everyone says that to you, and you see the home environment that they are living in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes the play that much more interesting. So one of the things I like to do with plays is when there's an obvious villain or there's an obvious, like, good guy, is to switch perspective. On that.
Yeah, I think that plays into life. I think we interact with people making so many assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, I mean, it's really easy to become guarded as a person. Sometimes life is hard, and sometimes people are mean, and sometimes you're reacting to situations that happened when you were a kid, and you're not even consciously aware of why you're doing whatever you're doing. So you're even making assumptions about yourself and your own motivations. But
yeah.
I think that's true to life. I think that there's, you know, two sides to every story, sometimes more.
Yeah.
And that everything is put through your own filter. And this is my beef with books. I think that when you're reading a book, you're the only person ever having that experience. And even if you were to read that book 2 weeks later, your experience would be different because of what's going on in your life, and different things would jump out at you. And I also think that playing a villain would be really fun.
Yeah. a good example of what I'm talking about, by the way, with Cat in the Hot Tin Roof, which is something that I can totally pull. So, like, Big Sister, what's her name?
Big Mama?
Sister Lady.
Sister Lady, yes.
Sister Lady. Sister Lady's character, you automatically dislike
her. Sister Woman.
Sister Woman, yeah. But you automatically dislike her because you're watching it through Maggie's eyes.
Yeah, and Maggie thinks very little of her.
Yeah. But if you switch it to her perspective, she has, like, 5 kids.
And she was, like, coming from a family that kind of lost their honor and lost a lot of their money trying to, like...
And it's very obvious that
her husband?
Yeah, that her husband was the child who went to school, got
the job. He was the firstborn. He was, like, And then at the end, the parents don't even acknowledge him.
Exactly.
I mean, the mom's like, where's my only son? And he's like, wait, hello, I'm your son too. And I'm your first son.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I need Brooke. He's my only son. Like, exactly. Completely negating his existence, despite the fact that his whole life has been like building something that his parents would acknowledge and be proud of.
Exactly. So
it's amazing. It's like real life.
Yes. If you play with him if you just like for a minute switch perspectives and look at the story through their eyes, all of a sudden it's a very different story.
Yeah.
And you like have such sympathy for that. It's really a fun way to.
Well, and I think that is like the universal human need to be seen and validated by your parents, but also like, what do you do to. Like, what are you still doing to try and get that validation on whatever level? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I think about, I mean, for some reason that made me think of when I was a little kid and I actually had problems with stealing things. And there was one time I was accused of stealing something and I didn't do it. And I just remember being like, this is not fair. But it's just like, I feel like it's a similar feeling of like, there's nothing I could do in this moment just because of the characters around me, I guess you could say, and the circumstances and the appearances.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't steal things anymore. I'm hyper aware of stealing.
I went through a phase.
It's a phase. And I mean, without belittling my family by any way, shape, or form, I was kind of taught to steal. And then I was like, oh, this is bad.
Yeah, I stole. whatever. I stole a lot from NYU, like from their dining halls. Just from their dining halls.
Food?
Fine. Yeah. So you would get
girls gotta eat.
Girls gotta eat. You would get one meal swipe and I would find a way to like, and you could like, you have like cash that you could pay for it. But it was really expensive. It was like $15 per meal. And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I used to like grab like a soda or a chip bag. One time I stole three meals and only paid one meal swipe. That was like my coup de grace. And I was, like, going on it for so long. And then at a certain point, I went to Staples. And they gave me hassle with something and, like, overcharged me. And I was, like – so my logic behind stealing from NYU was, well, they're overcharging me here. So it's okay. So I was, like, well, they've overcharged me, so it's okay. And I walked out with something. And I was, like, that's not good. And I walked back in and, like, dropped it and was just – I haven't stolen since.
Yeah, I feel like it's something that most people have experienced, and like whatever the motivations, it seems like obviously you're processing something. And I do think that there's like this, I mean, I think that if you talk to someone, they could always justify it. And that's my thing is like, oh, I can steal from a major corporation because they're a major corporation and they're killing the planet and they don't even recognize me. And they're kind of creating a system where it's really easy to like whatever, whatever, whatever. But at the end of the day, even if I, like, no one ever knows, I have to live with that. And it's something that just started to weigh too heavy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, by the way, relates back to what I was talking about, looking at the characters from a different perspective.
Yes. I'm so glad that you're pulling things back.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite character that you've played?
Oh, golly, that I've played?
Or a favorite character, like, just overall.
Just a favorite character overall.
Al, while you're thinking, so when I was in high school, I actually was really blessed as a child. My grandmother worked for the like parking services of the University of Utah, which is a pretty well-known, pretty prestigious school in Salt Lake. And she somehow got me tickets to so many events. Like I saw live gymnastics, I saw live ballet, I saw some live plays. I saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and I think I was 8, and I was like, what? Is happening. I was just like, that guy's crazy. He thinks I was like so concerned. But in high school, I went to lots of schools. I was one of those kids that was like, here, 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 and I graduated and done. Layton High. And we had actually an exceptional drama department, and especially that year had just like some really incredible students, and they put on the Scarlet Pimpernel. And from that point on, that has always been my favorite, because whenever I listen to it or like see it or read it, it throws me back to that way that I felt, which was just like, I mean, just in awe and just like completely immersed in the story. Like hours went by and I was just like completely present, which is what live theater can do for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my favorite. And of course, like, what's his name? Shoot. I'm like, he's my favorite. The Scarlet Pimpernel. Because he's so funny and like flamboyant and like blah, blah, blah. But on the side, he's like, we've got to stop this. He's like playing chess. So he's a dynamic character.
Yes.
And every character is dynamic, but you also have to deal with the lines that are on the page, I think. So that's like the struggle.
Yeah, that's very true. Favorite character, by the way. I have several, so I'm sorry this list is going to go on. Favorite that I've played?
We have 25 more. Just kidding.
The favorite character I've played would probably be Aldonza from Man of La Mancha, which is a musical.
Yes.
I've not gotten that character right, and I keep hoping that I get to do her again, but I played her in high school, so I'm not going to get the chance for another 20 years, and that's fine. I'll be ready then. Then we've got Sondheim, which I've never played, but the Sondheim characters, to clarify. The witch from Into the Woods, because Nessa needs to have a because here. So the thing about the witch is that it was one of the first times that like I saw a theory that I strongly believe then brought to life, and I was just like, what? I can't believe this character, this world, da da da. So the witch is the mother of Rapunzel, or not the mother of Rapunzel, but the
she
witch
like adopts
from
her, yeah.
Rapunzel. And I always believed that the witch wasn't a bad character.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like she was given a lot of slack because I think I've talked to you about this. Essentially, what happens is the witch has this garden, right? This beautiful garden.
Mm-hmm.
And this man comes over and steals from her. And he's like, I'm sorry, my wife wanted only your vegetables.
Like, excuse me?
Right? Like, she
speaking of stealing.
Right? And it was like she wouldn't take the vegetables in town. She only wanted yours, but she's pregnant, so I couldn't really deny her anything.
Yeah. Hormones.
Yeah, hormones. And the witch was like, all right, fine. One time, at least in the story I've read.
I'll be nice.
I know there are other things. But yeah, she was like, fine, once. But if you do it again, that baby is mine. And he was like, I promise, never again. And he goes off and he steals from her a second time. And honestly, I can't blame her. Like, if you're a secluded person who lives on your own, your only happiness is your garden.
Right.
This man.
What are we teaching our children?
Right? This man keeps stealing from you. And it's because his wife is insistent. Like, that sounds like a spoiled, like, woman. She's not going to do right by her kids.
Yeah.
And this man, obviously.
But had he not done that, there would be no story.
That's true.
You like how I keep whispering?
I know. But then essentially she raises Rapunzel really nicely.
Yeah.
Until isolation.
Well,
no, she's allowed to be outside in the story that I've read. She's outside.
Is this Hans Christian Andersen?
Yeah, I think I think so too,
but don't quote us on that, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
And I'll keep whispering because it's fun.
So much whispering.
But it's loud whispering so you can hear it.
Yes.
Also, you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you're just tuning in, you can catch the podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Audio Boom.
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 Finishing it up, she basically puts her away in puberty to keep her away from the outside world.
Yes, because it's scary. And you're going to get hurt, and I don't want you to get hurt.
Especially during puberty.
Yeah.
So the witch has that same exact storyline in Into the Woods, where she has put her away to protect her from the world and realizes that that actually hurt Rapunzel more than it helped.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all done out of love.
For some reason, that makes me think of The Little Mermaid and how I grew up with a version of the story where she was empowered and she was making choices, but she also was, like, conflicted. And then in the Disney version, it seems like, you know, fairy tales were made to have morals, and so it's like you pull the moral from it. In the Disney version, the moral of the story is, like, do whatever the hell you want. Everything will be okay. Oh, your dad says this. Don't listen to him. You just, like, do whatever you want, and everything will turn out okay in the end.
Yeah.
And I really like the original where she, like, I don't know. It just seemed a little bit more like she seemed a little bit more of a powerful character in that she was less flippant, maybe.
Yeah. And there's also, like, she made her choices and she had to live with the consequences of them.
Yeah, and in the book she becomes Seafoam because she refuses to kill the dude that she fell in love with. Or was
she
it the girl?
She killed his wife. She was going to kill his wife.
She was. That was like the witch who, what's her story, by the way? Right? This evil sea witch who's just like out to get the Little Mermaid. Why is she so bitter? What happened to her? Like, was she like slinted by another lover? Who knows? Who knows? But if you want to write that story, I bet it'd be good. It'd be like the Wicked version for the...
For Little Mermaid. Which
I feel like there was a resurgence in a while of like villains are the heroes. Yeah. You just have to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That has been a very big thing. Shrek also has that storyline.
I think we all secretly want to side with like the underdog.
Because when you understand their reasonings, it's very human. I mean, look at Snape from Harry Potter.
Snape.
Yeah, always.
I remember, excuse me, speaking of Lord of the Rings, I watched the show before I read the books up through the second one, I think. I watched
the movies?
The film. And then
there was a cartoon version that came out.
Oh, there was. Of The Hobbit, I saw that. I didn't see Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there was The Lord of the Rings also.
They're so cheesy.
It's
but good.
The kind of thing that, like, I imagine getting high would make it so much more interesting.
Do you want to schedule that in sometime?
Always.
Okay. Let's. That does sound really nice. And yeah. We'll schedule that after the show. So, and if you're interested in joining, you can email me. Just kidding. So after the second film, Gollum kind of like, I don't know, is just like, what does he do? He like,
he follows them, but from afar, offering his help.
Yeah.
Sorry, I dropped this. Anyway, he's offering them their help, but then he ends up, spoiler alert.
There's like this moment at the end of the movie where he's like, I'm actually going to kill them and get the ring.
Well, he
or
was
something.
Always going to kill them and get
that
the ring.
That was his plan, yeah.
But the fight was that Sméagol, who's still alive within him, was starting to feel a kinship towards these hobbitses.
Yes. And then you're like, he's redeeming himself. And then at the very end, there's like this moment where you're like, wait, he's not.
Yeah.
And then at that point, that's when I started reading the books. And I read the books and I was like talking to my friends and I was like, please tell me he's like a good character because I so wanted him to be good. And my friends lied to me and said he redeems himself at the end. And this goes back to interpretation because in the end, he does grab the ring and falls into the lava. And according to my friend, that was redeeming himself because he, in essence, destroyed the ring that otherwise would not have been destroyed. Mm-hmm. And here I am thinking of like, no, that's not good. Like, that's not a good ending for this character that I got really attached to because of his story.
But the brilliance of it is that, to a degree, it's not redeeming, but it is... In a way, because
it is, I couldn't see where my friend was coming from, but I was like disappointed.
Well, it's the
I wanted
story
more
of how evil corrupts, because or absolute power corrupts absolutely. I suppose would be more appropriately. Because the only reason he couldn't escape it was because the power and the lore of that ring,
which
was
he was so attached
to,
because he'd had it for so long.
And Frodo does not redeem himself either. He put that ring on his finger.
He was like, psych!
Yeah, he went on this entire journey and went, never mind.
He's like, I like this ring.
Yeah. So if it wasn't for Gollum /
But this also caters, I think, to the value of a story and also the value of a story that doesn't end the way you want it to because then it sticks with you. Mm-hmm. If something's like all nice and packaged and the end's like, and they lived happily ever after, you're like, okay, cool, gone. And it like leaves your psyche. It's like too perfect.
Yeah.
But it's the stories that bug you.
Yeah.
That also stick with you and change and you're analyzing them and trying to understand, which is being human.
Yeah. It's the stories that are true to life and that have that conflict that life has. Since not everything is black and white.
I don't think anything is black and white. It's except Oreos.
Unless you get a flavored Oreo.
Unless they're flavored, the mint ones. Yeah, here's the thing. I don't like Oreos, but if you put one in my hand, I'm going to eat it. And then I'm going to want
more,
like 7 more. And then I'm going to be like, these are disgusting and not good for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
How was your brownie?
I put Nutella on top of it, and it worked out really well.
I went with strawberry ice cream. It was also pretty good. Nason and I went to this burger place, and we got like mediocre burgers. And we're both like, eh, whatever, it's a burger. And then the waitress came around. She's like, do you guys want brownies? We're just throwing them away. And we're like, yeah.
Always.
And then I took a bite and I was like, oh, they're just kind of like brownies. They're not really like chocolatey or very like good. Mm-hmm. But then I went back to it and it was warmed up and it had ice cream on it. It was a really nice experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with me, with just the extra Nutella.
And Nutella would be just very...
Just bumped it to chocolatey.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what I want.
And I wanted to make your expectations low. I was like, these are not good brownies. And yeah, I think it worked.
That did. It helped out a lot.
Cool. I want to talk about a couple more things, but we're also so good at talking that time is flying.
We have some time.
I want you to talk a little bit more about bringing a character to life.
Yeah.
As an actress, your job is to, like, get insight and then like make this person a living thing.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we've been talking about is actually part of that overall that process.
Yeah. Words.
so basically what you want to do if you're working on a character is first like kind of analyze them from, well, first you read through and you read their journey. Mm-hmm. So you look at the play through their eyes. Then, or you just read the play in general, I guess. First, you just read the play in general.
Get the story.
Then you look through it in their eyes, and then you see what the opposition is. So you see what they're working against.
And, like, their motivations.
Exactly. Especially if you're playing, like, a villain. Because, obviously, with the hero or with the protagonist.
It's written in somewhere
for
it.
Boom. But if you're doing an antagonist or even one of the side characters, there's a bit more work to it. So you have to, like...
It seems almost like writing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much backstory that you're not necessarily saying in the book, but that is influencing what happens in the book.
One of the things I do to help me out if I'm, like, having to do an audition, for instance, and I have less than a day to figure out why my character is saying these 10 lines in this 2-page scene when I have nothing else to it, is I will write an inner monologue.
Huh.
So then that way, like, I'll have, okay, why am I thinking this next thing? A lot of people just do actions. I personally like to have the whole thought. So now you've done all that work. You've seen them from the outside perspective, seen them from their perspective. Then you kind of do, and you've seen the general story of it. Then you try and figure out how they're similar and different than you.
Hmm.
And you can, like, play in the similarities if you want to, explore the differences, because that's one of those big stretches. So, you mm-hmm. know, if you're playing somebody who's, like, louder than you, then it's, like, why? Why do they feel that way? Why is it that they can take more space than you? What is it about both you and them that is being blocked or being opened that you don't necessarily... Yeah.
Or, like, are they making noise because they want attention or they don't feel heard or... They've always just been the loud one, and that's the only role they know how to play. Mm-hmm. There's so many reasons why.
Yeah, exactly. And it becomes this kind of fun building of a character, and it is very much like writing. You create this their world, and you create their reasons, and then you just have to fit it to the play, which is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. And the vision and mood of the director mm-hmm. and... the other characters you're working with, obviously, have a big impact. Ooh, my computer started moving.
One of my favorite things is when the character does something I would not... You know how it's a cliche that actors say, like, I don't see my character doing this.
Yeah.
And I've run into those sometimes where I'm like, I just can't understand why my character would do this. And then it becomes detective work. Like, okay, why? Like, why would my character say this? Why would my character do this? What is the reasoning behind it? And that's when you get some of the more human moments of a person.
Yeah, and we all do stupid shit, too. I mean, I look at my life and I could go back and be like, I have no idea why I did that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I cannot explain it to you. And I've been transcribing my journals, and so it's even more, like, fresh in my mind of, like, why was, like, I cannot understand what my motivations were sometimes in terms of the decisions that I made.
Yeah.
I'm happy with how everything turned out, but sometimes I'm like, interesting. I also, we don't have too much time, but I do want to at least talk about, you were explaining reading Shakespeare and how reading Shakespeare is your favorite thing to do because it's almost, the cadence is almost already written in for you. Mm-hmm. Do you want to speak to that for a moment?
Yes. Okay. So, Hamlet has this famous speech that I was going to research and then I forgot to. Anyway, Hamlet has this famous speech where he talks to an actor and tells him how to perform his words. And that's the closest that we have to like what Shakespeare wanted. Uh-huh. And it's things like just speak the words as they are written. If you can't act, just speak the words. Don't add time. Don't add like pauses or your own word because it is written to already kind of flow in the way that he wanted you to perform it. So examples of that are like sometimes there are lines that are two or three syllables under iambic pentameter. Mm-hmm. That means that you can take time in that line or at the end of that line to make your point. So if you want a break or a breath or like then you can take it but only in those short ones. If it's over full, that means you speak quickly. Mm-hmm. You get the words out as fast because you're supposed to, you know, because you're supposed to have that in the beat and the rhythm of it. There are also, he uses the words of like the consonants or the vowels to create this feeling. A good example of that is the hurry apace, you fiery footed steeds to Phoebus' lodging. Sorry, I'm butchering Shakespeare. but the Juliet's Hurry Apace monologue, uh-huh. It's if you read it out properly, if you just read it through, it's kind of close to like orgasming.
Ah.
Nasa says.
Ooh. Ooh.
Because I like that's orgasming. What that moment is. Don't we all?
If you don't like orgasming, let me know. I'll point you some good directions.
but because that's what that is, because she's anticipating her wedding night. She's anticipating. Mm. And so a lot of it is very quick and it gets faster towards a certain point. Consonants become less. They're like more in the beginning and then they start to. And then when she hits the climax, all of a sudden the pace of the monologue slows down. And whether or not you put acting into it, and that's what I love about Shakespeare, is that you don't have to act it. It's all written out for you. You just have to find the truth in it. Whether or not you're, like, putting that in, it happens.
Yeah. It's kind of written in. I mean, it's poetry.
Exactly. Or with Paulina's monologue. Paulina is one of my favorite characters. Paulina's monologue, what studied torments tyrant hast for me? Like, because of how many consonants are in that.
Yeah, it creates pauses.
It creates pauses, and it also kind of, like, attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Because T's...
There's an intensity there, yeah.
Exactly.
He chose those consonants intentionally,
exactly.
If you will.
And that's all of Shakespeare is done intentionally.
That group of men that was Shakespeare, they were so smart.
All the writers.
All the writers of Shakespeare were very, very good at what they were doing.
But it's really fun. So if you ever look at a monologue, a Shakespeare monologue, just look at it like that. Just look at the consonants, the vowels, the feminine endings. The feminine endings would be ones that instead of dun 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 are dun. Done. instead of the line and the U, it ends on the line as opposed to the U, which makes sense if you.
If you know what we're talking about, you know what we're talking about.
Pentameter. If you know what I'm saying.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on my show. I like to end with a series of rapid fire questions, and we'll just go as fast and as far as we go. Is there a book that you have not gotten around to reading?
John Darnielle's latest book. I've read the first couple of pages, and I want to continue reading it, and I just have not, and I feel bad.
What is it about? What is it? Do you know?
I don't remember the name.
I'll look it up. Yeah. I'll find it later. If it's bugging you, check out the show notes next week. Is there a book you remember your parents reading to you? That Dr. Seuss in Spanish?
No, that's one that they chucked at me. The one that I remember is The Chronicles of Narnia, specifically... The Magician's Nephew. That's my favorite of that series.
Yeah, I feel like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe gets so much attention, but
it was the first written,
seven books.
And that's why. but chronologically, The Magician's Nephew is the first in the story.
I think that might be my favorite, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one.
Great. Do you have any rituals or routines related to your reading and writing? Or in your case, you talked a little bit about acting, so we can do that.
One of the things that I have to do is I have to usually force myself to read past, like, 10 minutes. Because if I can read for more than 10 minutes, I'm in it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no breaking
out. Just, like,
me out.
Stepping into that world sometimes is it's a little hard.
Because it takes a lot of energy for me.
And your mind's like, oh, cool, we're sitting. And then it goes 1 million miles a second. And you're like, I'm trying to read here.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I always create, like, this very elaborate world around me. And then it's like, I'm in that world as I'm reading the book, which is amazing. But it takes so long for me to get
there. Yeah, you got to get all the details built in there.
So what I usually like to do is just get any distractions, everything I would want set up.
Yeah.
Sit and read. And then it's like, okay.
Cool. Is there a book that influenced your transition into puberty? I've noticed that that happens a lot for people.
Yeah. Possibly. Let me think. Hold on. Sorry. There's.
So I feel like when you're a teenager, there's some book that like changes you, that it's sexy or it's like thinks about things differently, and you read it and you're just like, I am different. I am now no longer a child, or something
like
similar.
It would be a lot of comic books, probably Ghost World. Would be the comic book that I would be like, yeah, this one, because it was dealing with like being an outsider in your teenage years. I read a lot of comic books during that transitional phase that were like inappropriate for 12-13 year olds. Like I read Crumb.
I don't think that that's I'm a big believer that there's nothing inappropriate. If you're reading, awesome, keep reading.
I mean
in terms of content, yeah.
But, like, it would definitely have been, like, Ghost World, Crumb, Mad Magazines.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. He's so great. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here, Nasa, and I'll make sure to do some links. Check me out. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Audioboom, iTunes, Stitcher. Empty Orchestra is next, and I will leave you with a word, take it or leave it, racontus.
Two people rally cats. We have an unhappy cat. He is restless, needs attention, loses patience, seeks affection. Monkey grooms, blossom blooms. Do you dig germs? The germs.